got my head twisted around there a little bit. We'll be in Philippians chapter 4, verses 4 through 7. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let all men know your forbearance. The Lord is at hand. Have no anxiety about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. The word of the Lord. Probably all of us here have had the situation at one point or another where we're going through something very difficult, very stressful, overwhelming to us, and somebody has said, don't worry about it, it's going to be okay. They're well-meaningly reassure us, don't worry about it, it's going to be okay. And Paul's three little verses there we just read in many ways feels like that to me. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm able to go, okay, I'm not going to worry about it. And that gives me a moment of pause to slow down and kind of let go and put things in perspective. There are other times where someone says that and it just I just kind of want to look at them and go, well, yeah, right, that's fine and dandy, but, you know, I still got a really bad thing to deal with. You know, and it's like, I know this is well-meaning and I'm grateful you're telling me this, but it's just not really helpful right now. And even further on the end of the spectrum, it can almost be a little bit guilt-inducing because there's times where I can feel like when I read these verses, if I don't pay attention to four very important words there that I'm going to come back to in a moment, I can almost feel like, man, what's wrong with me? Why is it that I can't just not worry and let go? Do I just have very bad faith? You know, why is it that I can't just rejoice in all things? Like, flex my rejoice muscles and be good, right? And I think that Paul's audience could have easily felt that way. To put it in perspective, the audience in Philippians is probably the early church is definitely going through some pretty intense persecution, and they have people being arrested. Paul himself has been arrested. He's writing this letter from prison. I'm sure they had to be concerned and fearful, and he's trying to reassure them. But when he tells them, rejoice in all things, and he's sitting in a prison cell, and they're waiting any moment for maybe soldiers to pound on the door of somebody's home that they're worshiping in, it falls a little flat. It's a tall order to just rejoice in all things. And then to tell them, well, be gentle. I think this says practice forbearance, this translation. Let me look at that again real quickly. It's in the fifth verse. It says, let all men know your forbearance. And in other translations, more recent translations, it says, let people know your gentleness. And he's telling them, you know, you've got Roman soldiers that are going into people's homes, dragging them off, and here's my advice to you. Show people your gentleness. Well, how far do you think that's going to go with the Roman soldiers? Probably not very far, you know. And then last but not least, he throws in that coverall blanket of, don't worry. Just pray about it. Don't worry. Now, I've mentioned almost everything in that verse but four words, and I'm going to come back to them. I'm going to leave you hanging there for a moment. And I want to tell you a story, and then I'll come back to those four words. Because I think without them, having someone give you those reassurances can just be a bunch of self-help kind of, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps advice. And if you're not able to do that, if you can't just turn your worry off or flip a switch and suddenly want to be gentle to the person making your life miserable, or be a person who can just rejoice in all things and be thankful, it can be a little bit guilt-inducing. Here's the story. Some of you know that I like to do yoga. I'm working on being certified, and I used to go to a studio in Texarkana, and it was a hot yoga studio. And everybody always asks, what's hot yoga? Hot yoga is it's yoga in a heated room. It's just what it sounds like. And everybody says, well, how hot is it? and it's like 100 to 105 degrees. So it's pretty darn miserably hot, you know? And they're like, well, is it like being in a sauna? And I said, no, because like saunas is a wet heat. This is a dry heat. It's infrared. It's much more like being in a microwave oven. that somehow doesn't reassure them. You know, I don't see them going, oh, I want to go with you next time. But I had a bunch of friends that went there. And one day I was there and two friends were in front of me. And we were doing something very simple. We were just making a transition from one pose to another. And I heard this pop. And I saw this friend of mine just collapse down onto the floor in front of me. Fortunately, she was next to a good friend who immediately checked on her. And she had hip surgery a while back. She had been cleared and was good to go back. But her hip had come out of socket. And she didn't break it, but it had dislocated and come out. And she was in bad pain. And you could feel the whole energy in the room go into this tense, oh my gosh, what do we do now mode? Like if you've ever been in one of those situations, like I've been in worship and had someone pass out and everybody's like, what do we do? You know, and it was kind of that moment. And the instructor kind of kept going because someone else was attending to her, this friend of mine. But someone else went out and called an ambulance. And I just remember all that nervous energy being in the room until the moment I heard the door open up and these two paramedics came in and started talking to her. And all of that, oh my gosh, what are we gonna do? Scared, worried, fretful energy was sucked out of the room. It just disappeared when these two guys came in. Now, we didn't know them from Adam, but they were paramedics. And we knew that they had the power and they had the ability to affect a difference in what was going on. And so there was instant relief. And they came in and they did some things to stabilize that hip and they brought her out and we went to the hospital. And then I saw another wave of relief for her when we got to the hospital and her husband got to the ER. Now she not only had people who had the power and ability to make a difference in her situation, she also had someone there who she knew deeply loved her, and that was just extremely reassuring. Whether they could really do much or not, just having someone that cared intensely for her was a game changer for how she went through that experience. She was no longer alone in it. And I share that story with you because I think the critical four words in this passage, which I never see on a coffee cup, almost everything else I see on a coffee cup, I've seen mugs that say, rejoice in the Lord always, again I say rejoice, or t-shirts. I have seen mugs that say, you know, do not be worried, but no, do not be anxious about anything, but in all things, come to the Lord with prayer and supplication, giving thanks to God. I've seen that on a mug. I've seen on t-shirts. What I never see, and these are the critical four words in this whole passage, is the Lord is near. The Lord is near. I think this translation, let me see how it put it. The Lord is at hand. It uses five words. I'm going to go with four. The Lord is near. Because in a crisis, I need it as tight as I can get it. and they're both appropriate translations. Lord is near is a little bit more current translation, but the Lord is near. The reason that four words is so very critical is without those four words, all the instruction in this passage really is basically sort of, okay, just buck up and do it. You're gonna be all right. And you know what, sometimes we don't have it in us. Sometimes our circumstance is so overwhelming and beats us down so hard that there is not enough willpower in us to just will it away and feel differently about it. For example, I have a very good friend who, she's been clean and sober now for probably 22, 23 years. I'm trying to remember where she's at in her sobriety. And she has had well-meaning folks along the way that she's had conversations with when she was dealing with her trying to get sober, who basically said, well, you just need more willpower. And she said, that's not the problem. Like, I got plenty of willpower. If I need a drink or I want a drink, it's amazing what I can do to get that. I have bottomless willpower. But they realized their situation and what they were struggling with was beyond their own capability to resolve it. And they needed to turn to God. They needed to turn, to use the vernacular of AA, a higher power, and surrender their will to that will, because it's beyond their need. It's beyond their capability, I should say, not need, beyond their capability. I've experienced something very similar when I have been in some bouts of depression earlier in my life, where, you know, it did me no good for someone to say, well, John, just don't worry. No, my brain's chemistry was all awry, and not just worrying was not an option. It wasn't that simple. It wasn't a matter of just having enough willpower to do it. I needed means beyond my immediate personal means to be able to get out of that emotional psychological pit. I needed help. And if we do not pay attention to those four or five simple words, the Lord is near, the Lord is at hand, if we do not pay attention, if we strip this text of that, we are left with this passage to our own devices. But it makes all the difference in the world if we make sure that within that, we remember the Lord is near. And here's why. I'll be honest, confess, when I first wanted to preach this passage, I almost wanted to give you kind of a self-help sermon. What I mean by that was, I wanted to say to you, Paul says, rejoice again always, I say rejoice. And I wanted to, honestly wanted my sermon to be about how joy is a choice. You know, that joy is a choice. We can choose to be joyful within difficult circumstances. That's kind of about, I would say, about half true. There are times, I think, where we can say, I'm going to choose. We can always say it. I think emotionally making that shift is not as easy done as it is said at all. It's a whole lot easier said than done. But I wanted to do that, and I realized that's really a disservice to this text. The reality is, I think what Paul's trying to say, it's not, okay, just go do these things, buck it up, you can do it, pull yourself up. I don't think that's at all. He's not saying that joy is a choice per se. I think what he's saying, I think what Paul believes is that joy is a state of being, and it is a byproduct of choosing to know that the Lord is near. That choosing to know the Lord and to know that the Lord is near, then we can be joyful. In fact, joyful will be our natural state of being if we can come to that place where we know in our heart of hearts the Lord is near. But I will add to that, we have to know the Lord pretty good, right? You know, because like if a stranger walks through the door and we don't know their capabilities, there's no reassurance at all for us in that. And if we do not have a relationship with God where we understand the power and the might and the ability of who God is, if we really don't get that in the marrow of our bones, just kind of mentally assuring ourselves that he's near doesn't do a whole lot of good. You know, the pastor, my friend, who ran out to my daughter initially, I couldn't do anything more than what he could do for Ruth. Not really. There wasn't anything physically I could do for her that, his name was Doug, couldn't do for her. But the relationship I had with Ruth made all the difference in the world. So it's really critical, two things. One, for that the Lord is near to have any meaningful power in our lives. One, we need to be, I think, studious, diligent in our effort to understand who God is, the nature of God, what God has done, how God is active. And that we should constantly be looking at who he is both in the Word and trying to see and discern where he is in our lives. And sometimes that takes slowing down and really listening and asking ourselves, where was God today and what went on? And doing that regularly and stepping apart from the hubbub of life, the hurry and the scurry and the bustle, to hear that. You know, if I were to take you into like concert at Darlene's, imagine Darlene when she had her concert and she listens to all those students. We could walk in and maybe we know one of those students and I could say, listen for Janet's voice. And you may or may not be able to pick it out of however many, how many folks you have in your choir?
This year I have 65.
65.
But not all sure.
That's a lot of people. You know, you could probably not pick Janet's voice out of the 65. Very, very unlikely. I will say this though, I bet most parents can still hear it even in the midst of those other voices. And I'm sure Darlene can because she's listened to him again and again and again. But the parents have because they have heard that voice isolated from all the other voices. If I took you in a week ahead of time, I gave you a recording of Janice singing that song, and you listened to her voice apart from all the other voices, you'd go, ah, I can hear it in there. I can finally hear it in there. And it's the same way with God. God is constantly speaking and moving in our lives. But unless we have a lot of familiarity with the Lord and how He works and what that looks like, we can just miss it. We just don't see it because there's too much other noise, if you will. But if we take time and we isolate time to just be with God, to spend time in prayer or spend time in the Word, to spend time learning about God, it becomes easier and easier and easier to hear that in the midst of the chaos. And it makes all the difference in the world. All the difference in the world. So we have to be studious. But the other thing is, I think it's really good for us to share God incidents, stories with one another. That's what I call them. I just virtually do not believe in coincidence anymore. But that we share God incident stories, things where synchronicities happen that just go beyond reason, and we have to realize in faith that something is more is at work than what we're used to. It's important that we share those stories so that when we say the Lord words, the Lord is near, we can believe the near part of it, right? That we can, because we have seen God at work again and again and again. Even in the midst of struggling to see that, we can carry within ourselves a faith and assurance that God is near. I may not see it quite clearly right now, but I can, out of experience, whether my own or seeing and hearing again and again other people's experiences, I can trust He's near. And I'll just close with this. I think that the Christmas is sort of the ultimate reassurance, really, that the Lord is near. We have at the heart of it this promise that Emmanuel, Jesus, is God with us. Jesus coming, Jesus becoming incarnate, God making Himself physically a part of our lives, and seeing that in Jesus and seeing Him walk with, alongside anybody and everybody, rich, poor, people in the middle, people broken, people needing healing, mean people, good people, everybody, walking alongside them and ministering to them and being with them, seeing the witness of that. It's really the ultimate reassurance that God is willing and able to be with us right now. If He would go to those lengths to physically be a part of our lives, surely God, when He says, "And I will be with you until the end of the age," He means it, you know, and we can count on that. He means it. So if you ever find yourself going to those scriptures or wanting to quote one to somebody or having them quoted to you, I hope you will now perpetually just affix rigidly to in your mind those four little additional words, "The Lord is near," because it makes all the difference in the world how we see and how we respond to them. All those other things, rejoicing, being gentle, not worrying, all those other things, if we know the Lord is near, will naturally rise out of us. We won't have to pull and tug on our willpower and try to summon it up somehow magically. It will be our most instinctive response, our natural response, The choice isn't to be joyful. The choice isn't to be gentle. The choice isn't to not be anxious. The choice is to know the Lord is near so that all those other things will be present for us in a powerful way. Praise be to God that God is willing to be with us. Let us pray.